back here at Vegas Summer League with Mike D'Antoni, coach of the Houston Rockets. Mike, how are you?
Fine, Adrian. How are you doing?
Great. Not much happening here for you since you've been in town.
Nothing's happened in the NBA. It was kind of an off season.
Let's start right with the Russell Westbrook, Chris Paul trade. Your thoughts on integrating Russell Westbrook into your team, how you are going to play he and Harden together. I imagine when you guys were talking about it, you start to think about it. Obviously, that's part of the organization's decision-making process. But now that it's here, it's a very different kind of player than Chris Paul. It's a ball-dominant player who doesn't shoot it as well. How does this work with James, with the rest of your group?
Well, I mean, obviously, we're talking about some of the most talented players in the NBA that maybe have ever been. Chris Paul was incredible. He's going to be a first-round Hall of Famer for sure. And we had two great years with him. And I've just found that from my Olympic experience and different things, that first of all, if the superstars want to play together, then they will make it work. And all we got to do as an organization or myself as a coach, look at the tendencies and see how we can maximize their talents. And it might be different from different people. And we will look at that, and I'll start looking now at tape and trying to figure out the dynamics between the two and how they played at Oklahoma City and how it's changed since there, the Olympics. It's exciting. Whenever you have great talent, it's exciting because it gives you a chance to win. And that's what we all want to do. But it'd be my job to maximize both their talents and what they do best. And it should be really good.
Mike, when you say that, when guys want to play together and James wanted to play with Russell Westbrook and Russ wanted to play with him, is that simply the reality of the league now? And when you have a player of James's caliber, you have a top five player in the NBA or top three, wherever you want to, how you want to rate him. If he wants to play with Russell Westbrook as an organization, if there's an opportunity to do it, that is simply what you have to do.
Well, that's kind of where the league's going. And it started a few years back when super teams started to come on. And then we've put so much a premium on winning titles that if one of these superstars don't win a title, then they feel like their career's incomplete, which I would, you could argue against that because there's so many good players and you have to have the special circumstances that go together. So it's a lot that's not the player's fault, obviously, but to be able to win a title now, you have to get superstars together. And whether it's two or three or how many else you can get. And then it becomes a chemistry because everybody's ball dominant. When you're a superstar, you've been the main guy for sure. Now you got to make it work. And sometimes personalities, it doesn't work. Sometimes it works for a while. Sometimes it's hard to manage sometimes. And, again, if they're not on the same page totally 100%, I think organization has to look and see what's best for the organization, what's best way that we can make this a functioning group. And, every team is reevaluating and maybe it'll change later, but right now that's kind of lay of the land.
When there's a decision of this magnitude in an organization, you have an owner who's involved now, you have a general manager, there's your voice, there's a superstar's voice. Can you get consensus on any kind of a big decision like this?
I don't think you ever have a consensus. And everybody, it's really not that, it's pretty easy if everybody just says, yes, 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 and nobody knows for sure. And nobody knows if it's going to work for sure. And you try to present all the negative points, all the positive points, and then you try to make the best decision you can make. But if anybody says, oh, for sure, this is going to work, there's no way. And then once you have it, then you have to make it work. And you're going to make it the best you can. And there's risk everywhere. But it's everybody's invested now, from the owner who's, billions of dollars these franchises are costing. So that's a big decision, plus the amount of money he has to pay in the contracts. Like I said, the superstars have to be invested because of their reputation and, what it does for them, for their career and their legacy. And then it won't work without their yes or no or whatever it is. And obviously the coach and general manager. The only thing that I see as the constant is that the superstars, the coach, the general manager, the owner has to have the same philosophy, more or less. and it has to be, okay, we're going in this direction. Now, there'll be disagreements along the way how to get there, but you fundamentally want the same thing. And you try to do the best you can. And then once you make a decision, then everybody's on board, and you try all four people, all four parts, the stars and the coach and the general manager and the owner, try to, okay, now let's make this the best we can make it.
When you brought Chris Paul in to play with James Mike, I mean, those two, it wasn't a whole lot different than the conversations I think he started to have with Russ once the Paul George trade happened. They wanted to play together. Chris, there certainly was a lot of competition for Chris. He was a free agent who anybody with cap space in the league wanted to have, and the Clippers wanted to keep him. But you also knew his age. He's 34 now, and probably the first 2 years might be better than the next two or three of his career, based on that position and age. Did that partnership simply, did it hit an expiration for James, for the organization, that I think the way Daryl has explained this a little bit, you're trading in a little bit 34 years old for 30 years old, and Russ, had it run its course with Chris James as the core of a championship contender?
Well, you know, I can't really speak for other people. I do know, and I've been saying this from day one, I think Chris Paul is going to have his next 3 years at a very, very high level. I don't see that big of a drop-off. I think also he's so smart that he'll figure if he loses, like, his ability just to blow by people, then he'll figure out how to use screens a little bit better or figure out or a coach should figure out for him also how to maximize. But his intelligence and his ability and his just competitiveness to be great, he'll be leaner, trimmer, stronger. I see him playing as long as he mentally can play. And sometimes I think stars just get tired of playing or mentally can't go through the routine or the of getting ready. But I don't see that in Chris. I see Chris as being very productive in this league as long as he wants to be for the next about 4 or 5 years. Having said that, you'd have to ask them, you know, whether or not, and it just seemed like, and the big thing is, you know, to get a superstar, younger one, then you have to have a superstar to trade him. They just don't give him away. And we traded great player for great player. And, you know, I would have loved that we all stayed intact and come back and try it again, and now I'm going to love the other way. You've got to be able to switch gears and go with, you know, what's presented as a coach, and I was enthusiastic both ways.
Mike, was there a tension in year two with James, Chris, within your key players that didn't necessarily exist in their first year together that you had to work through as a coach?
You know, it is funny because in my experience, and I'm not in the locker room all the time, and, you know, at halftime I go in the coach's room, and by the time we come out, everybody's kind of quiet. But I didn't feel that. I heard it sometimes, but I also heard it in the first year. And when you're talking about two alpha dogs competitive, and everybody has little chinks in their game or little things that could get better, as coaches or owner, everybody has those little things that, you know, and you're together for 82 games and through the playoffs and you come up a little short or you're struggling a little bit or you personally are not playing as well. And there is going to be tension. There's always going to be tension. Every team has tension. And you can't tell that our chemistry was worse than Golden State's or Golden State's is worse than – I'm sure Toronto seemed like a love fest. I'm sure they had tension all the way through. You do. And that's part of managing it. That's part of players understanding that – you know, everybody wants the same thing. It's not a selfish thing. Everybody wants to win. And I just think you navigate and you do the best. And there's a lot of white noise out there. And the best thing that the players can do is not listen to people because it is not right. If it's like on a scale of 1 to 10, if it's at a 2, then the media hype that the NBA has now, it's already ratcheted up to a 6. And it's not really that bad. And I was reading some accounts after the season. I didn't even know they had a, you know, whatever happened. Mm-hmm. And it didn't affect their play because both players in Game 6, which we lost, played really good. So, obviously, well, maybe we needed that sooner. So, I don't think that's not an excuse for us. We just got beat by a good team that beat us, and we didn't make big shots, and they did. But the tension and stuff is always going to be there. And you can ask PJ. PJ's yelling at everybody. So, you know, he's one of the greatest teammates ever. So it's, I think that's just life in the NBA, and people, you know, alpha dogs been around alpha dogs.
We'll be back with more with Rockets coach Mike D'Antoni in a moment. If you don't know your numbers, you don't know your business. But the problem growing businesses have that keeps them from knowing their numbers is their hodgepodge of business systems. They have one system for accounting, another for sales, another for inventory, and so on. It's just a big, inefficient mess, taking up too much time and too many resources, and that hurts the bottom line. Introducing NetSuite by Oracle, the business management software that handles every aspect of your business in an easy-to-use cloud platform, giving you the visibility and control you need to grow. With NetSuite, you save time, money, and unneeded headaches by managing sales, finance, and accounting, orders, and HR instantly, right from your desktop or phone. That's why NetSuite is the world's number one cloud business system. And right now, NetSuite is offering you valuable insights with a free guide. 7 strategies to grow your profits at netsuite.com/woj. That's NetSuite, NetSuite.com/woj to download your free guide, 7 key strategies to grow your profits. netsuite.com/woj. Back on the Woj Pod with Rockets coach Mike D'Antoni.
You look at the two cracks you had in the last 2 years against Golden State, the what if of Chris's injury last season, not this season, but last season.
Right.
You still get him to a game 7. You're leading, you know, you're in a game 7. Right. You're winning the game in the third quarter.
Right.
Is that going to be the what if when you think back to that group of, especially against a Golden State team that, nobody else was playing as competitive as your group played them consistently.
Well, there's no doubt. And again, you never know if, you know, what if Chris was well and Wayne got beat. You know, they were a great second half team. They've shown that through the years. And just because we're up 12 and no one was satisfied or thinking, oh, we got this. That's just the way they've been. They've demonstrated. Last year I thought we had a good chance. We were in a good place mentally. And I thought that was our best chance. This past year, we're 2-2, their best team, with everybody healthy. And with ours, we're 2-2, going back to game 5, and then Durant gets hurt. And to me, it changed a little bit of the mentality from them defending and trying not to lose, and we're hunting them. To, oh, Durant's out, it relieved them to now hunt us.
Yeah.
And we're trying not to lose. Now we can't lose now, you know. And I thought our mentality changed a little bit, and they got us. And, you know, may give them credit. They've got so many great players on that team, and Steve does such a great job that they beat us.
There had never been a moment in this group's run where they weren't supposed to win. And all of a sudden, right, Durant goes down. And for 24, 48, whatever the window was of time, it was, well, the Rockets, this is it. They have to win now. He's out. And and it deflates, it takes some of the edge off, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, now it's trying not to make up that mistake. Right. Don't screw it up, you know. And instead of just attacking and just play our basketball and go after them, I thought we were a little bit on our heels psychologically. And it happens. But it's also unleashed. You know, Curry and Thompson, and you keep going on. They, you know, with one Hall of Famer going out, they still probably have about 4 left on the floor. So it's not like and biggest thing, and people don't talk about it, in game 6, Iguodala was 5 for 6 from threes. And in our game plan, it would be like, okay, if you got to choose, you let him shoot the 3 and the other guys don't, well, he hits 5 for 6. If he hits 2 for 6, it would be good for him and better for us. But you got to give them credit. They stepped up in big moments.
The two teams in your career that probably still you're going to think about, they're two of the all-time great teams. Very few people beat them. The Spurs when you're in Phoenix, and this Golden State team. Are those the two that you just – like, you look back in history, and no one's going to hold it against you. You didn't get through them because of where they stand in the game. But in two different instances where you just know a bounce of a ball, history could be very different. Does that linger with you, or can you move past it?
You know what? You know, now I don't hate to say it, but yeah, I can move past it.
Yeah.
Because I love the teams and what we accomplished, and I love my job, and I love what I'm doing. And at the end of the day, we didn't win, I wasn't quite good enough, or whatever the reason, yep. whether it's bad luck or whatever. I can live with that because I'm giving it everything I got, and I'm enjoying this. And again, history is what it is, mm-hmm. And I won't be around to see it anyway. So it's one of those things, but I'm going to enjoy each day. And we're going this year. Guess what? We got a chance to get over the hump, and we're going to attack it, and we're going to try to get over there. But we just had. I regret little things along the mm-hmm. way that I didn't know at the time. That with experience or with the like analytics, just like the San Antonio thing. For me, the way to beat San Antonio was if I could have got Steve Nash shoot more often. If I would have. We'd have gone even smaller or whatever it is to negate how good San Antonio was and Duncan. We had to negate him elsewhere. We couldn't match up with him and play that style. And I didn't go 100% in because we didn't know back then. And we were trying something a little different, but yet tiptoeing in the water where we should have dove.
Yeah.
And we'd had a better chance. Doesn't mean we would have beat him. Or he could have still hip check Steve in the bleachers, or they could have made that big shot, or you can't stop Duncan, and they're champions, and we just didn't get over that hump.
You look at what has happened in the league just in the last few weeks, and you went from essentially a super team with Golden State. Kevin leaves, and now that's changed, and Clay gets hurt, so they're very different. And Kawhi Leonard goes to the Clippers and brings Paul George with him, and they might be the deepest, maybe the deepest, most talented team going in the season, and the Lakers don't get Kawhi, and now we have no super teams, and you have two stars in a bunch of places, including Houston. The league could look tremendously different if Kawhi and Kevin just stay, obviously Kevin's injury. And I think this is what Adam Silver always wanted, which is right. The talent spread out more.
Right.
And I'm not sure there's been a season, I don't know if you can remember a season, but there's probably more teams who think we might have a chance to win it. Denver, Portland, Utah, who yeah. maybe they have star play, but they have depth and they have continuity.
Right.
And they'd say, okay, maybe we can beat one of these two top heads. Maybe we can beat LeBron and Anthony Davis because we're deeper, or beat Houston because we're – it just feels like it's more wide open and there's more belief, and you got the teams in the East than at any time in at least a decade.
Without a doubt, and I think that's what makes the NBA great. And, it's funny, looking back, and I think this is true, but like Durant goes to Golden State and makes that super team that really is the best the last 5 years or 6 years, whatever it's been, the last 3 years for sure. There was a quirk in the salary cap. He got that little extra bump, and then he was able to slide in there. So I don't think it's going to be a norm that most people can do that, to load up. So now it's going to be diffused over four or five teams. So for the league, they have to, television, everything, because there's going to be some great regular season games every night. And then we mentioned the other teams like Portland, Denver, Utah. They're really good. And they got better, and they were good anyway. Now they've gotten better. And the only reason that they might not be as high profile, they haven't quite done it. They're young.
Yeah.
As soon as they do it, their names are going to be up there. But talent-wise, they're as good as anybody in the league. I mean, you have Lillard and McCollum as good as any shooting, any pair in the league. You have Murray Jokic and Denver. Any goes anybody in the league. They just haven't been on that big stage yet. Once they do, then guess what? They've got two superstars. So, you just go right down the line. Utah, same way with Mitchell. But that's why it's exciting, and that's why it's great to be a part of the NBA now. I mean, your job, my job, everybody's job. It's like, wow, we've dominated after the Super Bowl. It's already in the middle of July, and every headline is almost NBA stuff coming out, and we'll take a little break here in a second, but we'll be back in September going at it again. It's great.
Mike, your experience with Russell Westbrook, you had him a few summers in Team USA. What was your relationship like with him? What was it like being around him? What's your impressions of him?
Just a great guy. Just a great teammate, great guy, an unbelievable athletic talent. And, you can say that for a few guys, but just he's got a great heart. And like I said, you put it all together, and that's when you start competing with people, and then it comes down to character a lot and who you want to be there with and who, who's going to pick the other guy up and go forward. And to me, that's separates championship teams from teams that don't quite make it is the little bond that they develop between the players, and you got to have that, and that's why that if you know most of the time if most people want to make it work, it'll work because you have to overlook some of the weaknesses of others at the same time trying to get them to play better and vice versa. And championship teams, it comes down to character and heart and soul.
We'll be back with more with Rockets coach Mike D'Antoni in a moment. Hey, hiring used to be hard. Multiple job sites, stacks of resumes, a confusing review process. But today, hiring can be easy, and you only have to go to one place to get it done, ZipRecruiter.com/Woj. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the very first day. And right now, my listeners of the Woj Pod can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Woj. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Woj, W-O-J. ZipRecruiter.com/Woj, ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Back on the Woj Pod with Rockets coach Mike D'Antoni.
Going into this season, I mean, there's been a lot of talk about it. I've written about it. You're going into the last year of your deal. I think you guys tried to find a way to do an extension. So far, it hasn't happened. Are you resigned to the fact that you will go into the last year of your deal, or is there still conversations that could be had to extend this and not be in that lame duck situation?
Well, you know, you never know. I don't really dwell on it that much. I'm enthusiastic about the year coming up. Obviously, I love the city of Houston and I love our team and all that. It'll work itself out. I don't consider my focus has not been a lame duck and like, mm-hmm. Oh, what was me? I've got a great job and I've got great players and I think we have a great rapport. So whether it happens, doesn't happen, is not the focus. It really isn't. And, I don't think that, it'll matter one way or the other. You know, like I said, I love it. But right now, we're going to try to have the best year, and that's all I'm focusing on. Then it'll work itself out one way or the other, whatever way that is. And one good thing about having a lot of experience, I don't want to say old, but having a lot of experience, is that, hey, it'll work out. And if it's meant to be, it's meant to be. If it isn't, it isn't. But I guarantee you one thing, we're going to be really good, and we're going to have a great season.
When you have an ownership change, Leslie Alexander was the owner when you were hired. Tillman Fertitta comes in. He owns the team now. His style's different. He's been more out front in public. He lives in Houston. Leslie, I think, was maybe in and out a little bit more. What is that change like for a head coach and to have an owner who's hands-on with this stuff?
Well, I mean, you know, it's just different. I've been around different teams, so everybody has their style, and you respect it. And obviously, all these guys, all the owners are very successful people in what they do. They're very bright, and you just hope their philosophy is like your philosophy, like the general manager, and try to play a certain way. As long as you do that and they let me do my job, hey, it's great. You know, I don't have any problems with anybody in that sense. Now, if they interfere with the, you know, with the job, then it's not going to work out. And I think that's with anybody, but, so far so good. And, you know, they've given us all the resources we need to be successful. And anything you want, there's never been, you know, from upgrading the plane to the facilities to, trying to get the best players. It's all been very positive. And, that's all a coach can ask for.
I think what it's been hard for some people in the league to understand was Jeff Bezdilek, who had left your staff. You guys convinced him to come back during the season, and in the window of time he came back, your defense got better. And certainly that was a side of the ball that he focused on. It felt like it was a successful partnership. And then at the end of the year, he's not brought back. There were other changes on your coaching staff. How did that play out for you? You're the head coach. You've got to have the guys around you that you want. Why did Jeff go? Why did Jeff have to go?
Well, first of all, Jeff did a great job, and he's one of the best defensive guys. And, you know, he has to navigate. I give him a lot of latitude on defense just because they need to hear his voice. He's in control of that section, and he's been a head coach, so he knows ins and outs and how to handle people. But he did a terrific job. And I thought that where we were the first year, the strides and what we did, the only reason, and we ended up after the All-Star break, I think either second or third best defense. And the reason we had trouble before, we had guys injured, we had a roster change, we had all kinds of stuff. And so you get to a point now to say exactly why, I don't know totally. That you'll have to pose that to Daryl when you get him on the podcast, which I'm sure you have. But they're always looking to tinker and do this and that. And I do know that if we'd have stayed pat, I would have been happy. I do know that once they made that decision, then we will find guys, and we have. Elston Turner's going to do a great job, and I feel comfortable with him. And they are good about it. They wouldn't bring anybody in that I wasn't comfortable with. And so once we get over the first hurdle, and then you got to get to the second one, and then whether it's time to hear a different voice or whatever, I think Daryl made that decision, and you just live with it. That's the NBA. In the NBA, we're trying to tinker with everything to try to get it better. Might get it worse. I don't know, but it's our job to make it the best.
In an ideal world, and I don't know that there are many ideal worlds left in the NBA.
Right, or anywhere.
The head coach should have autonomy on his staff.
Well, autonomy, I don't think, because be like having, I'm not a big believer that the head coach is also general manager, where he has autonomy in personnel. You know, you can kind of get in loyalties, you get lost in whatever. And it's better to have somebody. Now, the only thing you've got to have is complete cooperation. If there's somebody I don't want or can't have, no, we can't do that. And there's somebody that maybe I want that Daryl's not comfortable with, then we're not going to do that. So we're both going to be comfortable and find the common ground. And there's so many good coaches, so many good people that you can do that as long as everybody's honest with each other and have the same intentions of getting better. And his job is to make me a better coach. And the only way he can do that, he better have some good assistance for me. And then I've got to feel comfortable with him. But if there's any daylight in between any of that, you're doomed.
The experience and learning to deal and navigate all the people, the agendas that a head coach has to deal with. You have star players who want players with them, owners, GMs who have an idea that might be different than yours. Last year when Carmelo Anthony was signed and started the season with you, lasted about 10 games, was there a point in your career where you would have had a harder time swallowing that, accepting that in? You were accepting of it. And it didn't work out.
Right.
At 68 or 67, wherever you were then, would you have looked at that thing differently at 57 or 47 versus how you would have, you might have fought that thing harder or just, because you didn't, whatever happened behind the scenes, when Carmelo was there, you coached him like you coached everybody else.
Yeah, I definitely think it would have been different if I was a lot younger and without job security and a family to provide for and all that. So there are different dynamics going on. And I think I was more volatile as a coach. I think one thing, as you get older, you learn what is white noise, what isn't, where the problems are, what the problems aren't, trying to make things work, and not getting so rigid that is doomed from the start. And we really thought going in, okay, let's try. You know, we lost Trevor Ariza. We lost a big part, and we have minimum salaries to give out. And you're talking about a heck of a talent around the league. And, you know, I knew the drawbacks, and I knew, okay, well, maybe we can force this in there. And then you roll with it. And Daryl and myself and the owner were all on the same page. We're going to try to make this work. And we wanted to work. And Melo, to his credit, tried everything to make it work. It just wasn't the right fit. And I don't think it's anybody's fault. Happens. And then Daryl had to shift gears real quick to get us, we were in a funk. And it wasn't all him either at all. Our veterans came back a little bit slower than the year before. We had suspensions, we had injuries, and then you get off to we had one point, I think we're 11-14. Mm-hmm. And it's like, now we got to go on. Then it just kind of rounded off, and then Daryl did a great job of bringing in Austin Rivers and Kenneth Faried and then found in Daniel House as an extra. So we were able to escape, you know, not making the playoffs, because in the West, we're not talking many games from, you know, third or fourth place to 10th place or 9th place. And it's scary in the West, because once you – hopefully we can avoid that this year. We start off a little bit better. But, again, you do get experience. You do a better job of being able to understand, okay, no, that's a problem. We've got to figure this out and then move on if you can't. And sometimes it's just the way it is.
2 years ago, we did a podcast. It was right when you started in Houston. You hadn't coached yet right there. It was at Summer League here, and I remember the one thing we talked about was from your time with the Lakers and Knicks, that the one thing, one of the things that you were determined to be better at in your mind was, I remember you saying, I always had an open door policy. Guys, you were come in and talk anytime you want, but that you had to do a better job of being proactive and building, sustaining a relationship with your star players. And you said, I'm going to be different with that with James in Houston. And by all accounts there, that's been the case. Has that been something like every day you wake up and say, that's a priority for me? We've got to always be talking. I've got to know what he's thinking. And that it has been different.
Without a doubt. And I think that's one of the lessons I learned. It's just, you know, as you coach, sometimes you get stuck into a philosophy that, yeah, the door's open, but, you know, sometimes superstars want you to go through their door. You know, it's like, and before you have a little, you know, sometimes as a coach, you get your pride up and go, no, he can come see me if he's got a problem. And it shouldn't matter. It's like we talk all the time now. And I think my relationship with Jay, hopefully, in my viewpoint, is off the charts. It's great. And also his style of play lines up exactly the way I want to coach, which sometimes a conflict comes there where I go into a situation or a coach goes into a situation and it might not be quite as efficient and you're trying to make it more efficient. So you're trying to change their games and they're making millions and 20s and 30s and millions of dollars and you're going in with, no, you need to change. That's automatic. That's going to be tough. And we ran kind of in a roadblock there at a couple stops, you're right. But at the same time, you can't forget about the 10th guy, 9th guy, 8th guy, the other guys on the bench, because they're looking for that relationship also. And my job right now is just to talk to everybody and keep talking and keep the communication. And what I try to tell them is funny. And what I try to tell them, hey, look, I'm going to talk to you on Monday, say, and whatever I tell you today, I'm going to tell you the truth. Now that truth might be different on Wednesday. You know, I'm going to say, you're going to play, and I might see something going, and I don't mean to lie to you, but it might change. So don't hold it again. Well, you said, well, you're right, I did. Now I'm saying this. But it just changes fluid all the time. You're trying to make the team function the best it can. You're trying to be as honest as you can, knowing that sometimes you're going to lead a kid on and try to give him confidence. You see someone like that's not going to work, put him on the bench, and then you think, yeah, he used me or he didn't give me a chance, and it just happens.
You play to James' strengths, and you've amplified. I remember we sat there, and you said, this guy's going to handle. He's going to be our point guard. He's going to average 12, 13 assists a game. I think those numbers jumped out at people, and people saw that happen. Not only was he scoring at a high rate, but as a playmaker, you kind of unleashed him in that way. But still, there was for you. You played a lot of with James. You're going to play a lot of isolation ball. He's been highly efficient in a way that was not your. We know what your teams look like at their height and the way the ball moved, and he's not Steve Nash. I think you maximized both players in a way that they had been before you, but they were going to do it different. Was that a little bit of a leap of faith for you, because you weren't going to change them, but you had to, the way you've always played the game, I think how you believe it should be played and how you redefined the way people play at all levels, the way you influenced the way Pop plays. You influenced the way Mike Krzyzewski played at Duke at the highest level and all over the game. But it's looked different in Houston than when you go in the Hall of Fame someday and they talk about the impact you had. It's not really how it's looked in Houston, right? Like you had to adjust to that.
Without a doubt. And I think that's a coach's job, is to try to adjust to the talent you have. In my head, yeah, that ball never sticks and it moves around and guys are flying all over the place and you're playing at a breakneck speed. Well, guess what? I've got the best player, maybe, arguably, and we can argue about it or not argue about it, but, you know, I just think that James is probably the best offensive talent that's ever played the game. especially. And then you look at him and how can I maximize that? And again, you know, when you lose, you know, people say, well, you can't win with the ISO. It's too much. It's too that. What we're trying to do is be efficient. And what we're trying to do is, well, how can we be the most efficient possible? And then you look at James's game, and he's the most efficient when he is ISOing a little bit, one-on-one a little bit, because he's a willing passer, and he's willing to give it off. So he's putting the pressure so much on the defense that if you're open, you're open. And, you know, then people say, well, they're just standing around, and they just get a ball. They can't play that way. Guys that he has played with, and we make this a point, and we show them at preseason, are going to have career years. P.J. Tucker, every year we try to tell, you're going to have a career year. You're going to average more. You're going to get more threes. You're going to shoot more times. And if you're standing over a corner sometime, hey, that's part of doing that. And so he has done that. You know, PJ's had career years. You know, Clint is young, so obviously he's going to have a career, but he's gotten better every year, and his stats are way up. And I just think Eric Gordon has a career. You know, Gerald Green's had career years. So you just go on, and that's the talent that James has and what he has, and we have to play differently. Do we sometimes go too much one-on-one? Yeah. Do we sometimes ISO, or do we not move enough? Yeah, we do sometimes. You try to stay in line. But I can also make the argument, you know, sometimes teams overpass. Sometimes they move too much. They're too helter-skelter. So you try to find a balance on what is best for your players. And Daryl does a great job of filling in role players. I don't want to call them role players. They're stars in their roles.
Right.
But players with certain skill set that fits what we want to do. And we might have a hard time with, you got a three-point shooter but needs to fly around screens. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we might not be able to maximize that. But I want a three-point shooter, maybe just stand there and catch and shoot.
Right.
So we're trying to match up. And James is a horse. And now, you know, the second superstar you had is a horse. And you just try to match it up and try to get the best and then play the way that we need to play to be the best. And our offense, and it's funny, you know, they got to change their offense. Well, it's been the number one or two.
Right.
Golden State's the best ever. And we're right behind them.
Right.
Actually, from mid-November on, we were a 1 point better offensively efficient than any team in the league. So we're not changing much. You know, we'll tweak it. But to say you got to change, you can't win that way, that's BS. Most games come down, you know, one or two plays. It's a three-point shot, missed or made. It's a call, missed or made. And so you're putting yourself in a position to be able to be the one to make that shot, be the one that creates the foul, be the one that hits big shots at big moments. And if we do that and give ourselves a chance to win every year, I think we're doing our job.
You had said, Mike, that you would at least like to coach another 3 years past your 70th birthday. Why, for you, why do you still do it? Why is it still important to you? Why do you want to keep grinding away at this? You don't have to.
No, because I love what I'm doing. And when you have players that we have, you get so close to them. And I look forward. When I go to bed at night and I get up, I can't wait to get to practice, see what, you know, James loves to practice. Chris loved to practice. See what they're going to do. And, you know, I love basketball. And I'm getting to be able to watch the best players ever in the history of the game do what they do. And there are days, like, you know, that are tough, but there's days, you know, thing about retirement is that you never get a day off. You're always retired. At least in this, I can go take a day off or whatever and get rejuvenated. But the excitement's still there, and it's still a lot of excitement. And I love coaching, being with players. And again, I would love to coach. You know, I say another 3 years only because I didn't say 4 years five years.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But as long as I have this enthusiasm, I feel this good. And I can't wait to get out of bed to go either watch a film or talk to players or see what they're up to. And then I love watching the game, you know, sitting there on the sidelines and watching James and Chris and then the rest of the guys, PJ, and how they play and how competitive they are. And it's exhilarating. It really is.
Where do ideas still come to you from? You might think of a way to innovate a play, do some things offensively, but will it come to you in the strangest places? Do you write it down when you think of something, or can you hold on to it without writing it down?
I think there's probably three places. I'm trying to think of the third one, but I know the different places are: one, watching players, how they play, And we have in practice, we do a random kind of thing. I said, try to do something different. We watch it. And we have plays. We have one play called Nash because Steve started doing this when we were doing it. I said, write that down. You know, the coaches, take that. We'll name it. Name it Steve. Nick Young did a couple of things. And we're going, wow, that will work. Write that down. We got that one. Then, so you watch the players and you try to figure out from them what they do best, what they do naturally, and how it goes. Somebody started flipping screens and we did that. Some players started. I don't remember who, and we put that in. And then the second thing, for sure, watch other coaches. I let them do all the work. I was just going to steal their stuff. I, you know, watch Brad Stevens. I watched Rick Adelman for years. And it's still all his stuff. He has some great stuff. And I told Rick when he retired, I said, Rick, he's been retired a couple of years. I said, Rick, I haven't come up with anything good in 2 years. If you don't start working again, I'm in trouble. And so it's just you watch other coaches, and we watch European coaches. They come up with some good stuff, and you watch how they do it, and you try to, will that work in our game? So there's ways to do it. I don't sit around and just dream of stuff. But just being around, and all I do is basketball. You know, that's my passion. That's what I love. I watch games. I'm home thinking about it or whatever. But it just comes to you. And if you're open to it and try it, and you know, then at the bottom line, if you got a great player, whatever I do, they're going, yeah, that looks good. I try with somebody else, it wouldn't look very good. So you just got to have great players.
Is this going to be a league too, Mike, where continuity – And like what we talked about it earlier, the advantage for Denver – now, Utah's made changes. Mike Connolly in. I think Mike's a guy who, though, can come in and fit and
sure,
mesh and best, elevate,
yes,
right? And
yes.
He's going to do what's right for the team.
Yes.
You know, but the teams where continuity is going to be their advantage over the dramatic change in other places, is that sort of going to be the – is that going to be the challenge of this league now? That, and you've dealt with that in Houston. Daryl's right. Going to just keep flipping your roster, right, and trying the combinations that as a coach, you've got to prepare for, like last year even, right? You had the early in the year, you're 11-14 and
right.
let's run through Free through here. Let's run Austin Rivers through. Who's Daniel House? I don't know. Let's put him out there and see. Hey, right. He can help us. That's the reality now in shorter contracts, player movement. 40% of the league was a free agent this year. That as a coach, you've got to be able to thrive in that environment now.
Yeah, you know, that's a great question because we even talk about it a lot. And a lot of times, teams staying together, you get the different levels of your defense and different levels of your trust of teammates and different levels of offense. Where if you just start off, we might have the first layer in is going well. But if you're together 4 years, you have a completely – now you got four layers of offense. So continuity is big. And you hope maybe that your talent level is so good that it beats the continuity. But if your talent level is great and you have continuity, that's a tough combo. So we'll see. But I thought even last year because of our turnover to midseason and Daniel House going up and down and wasn't with us for a couple months, you get into high-pressure situations like playoffs, and maybe you don't have that little extra that if you were together for 5 years, that it's like almost automatic. You know this guy's going to give you this, where you're still, this is the first playoff I've had with him. You know, it's like, will he give us that? Because you got to make decisions based on, will he do it? Not on, he just did it, and now we can do it again. And sometimes you can make some decisions not right, some gut decisions. Well, I don't think you can do it. Well, maybe you could have, you know, or it's not proven. And you can't prove once you make a decision. It's easy to criticize it because you don't know what would have happened if he did go out there or whatever. So a coach is always second-guessing himself, and that's y'all's job too, is second-guess everybody, and rightly so, because you don't know the other outcome. You might have lost worse the other way. But continuity is a big factor, and I don't know in this league nowadays how you're going to keep that. But Utah, Denver, and Portland have done a great job of kind of keeping their nucleus. And we've done a good job, and we're almost there. Four-fifths of them are the same. Now, you know, with Gerald back and Daniel House and Austin. So now you have another three. So we've had about eight guys coming back. So we can get on the second level of what we need to get on, and the rest of the guys will catch up quick.
I mean, you said it earlier that bringing Russell in, you – I guess you want to believe that you're going to short circuit that learning process because they have played together before. But they also play together very – they're very different players. James
– like he's coming off the bench, right?
Right. James was not James yet. James played a complimentary role to Russell then, and that's not how it's going to be here.
Right.
Does that have much value, do you think? Or maybe the fact that they played together for 3 years – a bunch of years ago, may not, you almost may still be starting over in some ways.
Well, we're going to start over a little bit for me, too. Mm-hmm. I've got to look and see how the dynamic works and try to maximize everything there. Again, I go back to what we said before. If they want to make it work, they will make it work. And whether it takes a week or whether it takes a month, I don't know. But they will, okay, you know, I feel more comfortable doing this. Do you feel that? And I'm stepping on your toes here, but you're not squawking because, you know, it's like because they want to make it work. But if you don't want to make it work, first time you step on my feet, I've gone ballistic on you. So that's the difference dynamic. And again, I just saw it work in USA Basketball. You put all those talents together. They want to make it work. It doesn't matter. The more talent you have, the better it is. And I think right now with this, you know, duo and other people, it'll work. Now, to what degree, we'll see. And see, my job is to maximize it, and their job is to be maximized, and we'll see if we can do it.
One thing I've wanted to talk to you about on air about, and we've talked off air a little bit about it, your time in the ABA with the St. Louis Spirits.
The best.
When you think back of like being a part of that time in pro basketball, and at the time, I'm sure there were two leagues, and you were just trying to hold on and have a professional playing career.
Yeah.
You look back at that time now and think, I was a part of what?
Just a great thing of history, a great slice of history that probably, you know, there's a lot of books now and people know about the ABA and whatever. I don't think people realize how good the talent was there was like six teams. You know, when I was there, it was like six, maybe eight teams and got down to six. But the talent every night, and I played with Moses Malone, who's, you know.
And Moses was Powell, so this was seven. Moses came
20,
out
I think.
20. He was like a,
yeah.
He was.
He played for
Virginia
Salt
Squad.
Lake.
Oh, Salt Lake.
It was Utah Jazz. But it was, the Utah Jazz. I think that's what they were. Stars.
Yeah,
Utah
Stars.
So, you know, to play with them, I played with him, and he was about 20, still young, still learning the game. Marvin Barnes, who, you know, is as good as any player I've ever seen him play, and he would be phenomenal in our modern day because he's a lanky four that would be shooting threes and quick. So he would be – he was like a Rasheed Wallace, you know, back then. So he would be good even now. His game would translate. Ron Boone, who, you know, was an announcer for Utah for years, and he was terrific. Freddie Lewis, one of the best point guards I've seen. And the Caldwell Jones, and just so many players we had on our team. I was just trying to make the league, and I don't think people understood how because the NBA, I think, had about 18 teams.
Yeah.
There was about six over there, so it was only 24 game teams. So you take away six of our teams and put those best players, it goes way up. And it was an exciting time, part to be with. And, you know, we got Bob Costas as a play-by-play guy. There's so many different little things that you didn't realize it at the time. And, you know, I feel a little bit like I looked, you know, I was there. I was on the Olympic Dream Team, not the Dream Team, but the Redemption Team, I think it was called, with all those superstars. And then just being able to be around these people is phenomenal.
When you were growing up in West Virginia, you thought, I'll play in college. I'll be a high school coach, right?
Oh, yeah. Something. Now, actually, my mom wanted me to be a doctor. She said, no, we've got enough coaches. So, and I laughed because my older brother was a coach, and then I stayed in basketball. Obviously, he was coaching, and our younger brother was coming through. We're going, no, don't do basketball. You be a lawyer, some doctor. You do something. So he becomes a doctor. He's still mad at us. He said, oh, I got to go to work every day. You guys got tennis shoes on. So he's still ticked off.
Mike, that's great. I appreciate you as always taking the time out, Mike.
No, thank you.